Welcome to the Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore. It is Tuesday, November the 2nd, 2021. On this edition of the Politocrat, Election Night in America. Election Night. The postmortem. Coming up right after this. Títulos de crédito from Alberto Iglesias, from the film Los Abrazos Rotos, which stands for Broken Embraces in English, directed by Pedro Almodovar. A magnificent director is he. And he has a new film, by the way, coming out later on. I think it's this month or next. Actually, it's next month. It's December. It's called Parallel Mothers. And anyone who knows of Pedro Almodovar, and I'm trying to say them at the same time, which is why you get Pelmo, because you're going for Pedro Almodovar and you're going Pelmo. Pedro Almodovar is a masterful director. He has been directing for many a year now and doesn't put a foot wrong, really, in any of his work. I find myself to be an immense fan of his fantastic catalogue of films. A filmmaker who knows how to tender emotion, knows how to tender feeling, knows how to give you a rich palette of love, warmth, emotion, heart, and a passion as well. And he cares about the people he chronicles. And the thing I like about Almodovar, among many other things, his sincerity to the work he does and the people he chronicles. And I love that he defies categorizing people in boxes when it comes to gender. I find that to be the thing about him that I really respect a great deal. I really do admire him for really trying to lay waste to this idea of binary genders. And he is someone who, and he's a gay filmmaker. I shouldn't even put it like that, should I? That's just... Anyway, you know, there you go. That's my straight bias, right? I don't say that, you know, Spike Lee is a straight filmmaker, you know? So why am I saying that Pedro Almodovar is a gay filmmaker? Why do I even have to use that word, right? There's nothing wrong with being someone who's gay. That's perfectly fine, of course. You know, I love and respect my gay brothers and sisters. I love and respect gay people. So I don't know why I had to do that just then. See, I caught myself. You can't say I'm not trying to be better. I'm trying. Yeah, it's better than not trying. It's better than not trying. And I just have to try harder is what I've got to do and do better. Because I caught myself there. You know, why did I have to say that he's gay? That's not the point, actually, of the whole point that I'm trying to make. My whole point is that I like the way that he defies gender. And not even defies it so much to be some kind of renegade, but defies it because he is attuned to the world and he cares about the world. He's a tremendously sensitive human being. And you can see that in his filmmaking. And you know whom he treasures. Mi madre. My mother. Mother. He treasures. I mean, I'd say 100% of his films are about his mother in some way, shape, or form. And that theme is always clear, or not always clear, but is clear in a number of his films. And none other than this new one called Parallel Mothers. Now, I talk about this film extensively, even though I've not seen it yet. But because I really respect Almodovar, and because that piece of music I just played from Los Abrazos Rotos, Los Abrazos Rotos, from a film that was around 12 years ago that movie came out, 2009 or so. And I really liked it. It's called Broken Embraces, Los Abrazos Rotos. It's just a very tender film, but it's got some jagged edges. A lot of the work that Amadovar does has the jagged edges to it. You know, some of his great work, by the way, was earlier in his career. I think of films like Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down. I think of films like Live Flesh. I think of films like Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown. I think of films like All About My Mother. I think of films like Talk to Her. I think of films like High Heels. These are the kinds of films that were vintage Almodovar. It's not that he has lost his touch in any way, but his films are a little bit different now, I think, as he moves through the ladder of life, as we all do. There are things about his films that aren't, well, they just don't, I mean, no, I shouldn't say that. The sharpness is there, but I don't know. The color, in some instances, doesn't burst to life the same way as it did in those earlier movies. But maybe I'm a little bit too harsh on Pedro Almodovar. One of my favorite filmmakers, by the way. I don't think I talk about him nearly enough. And why would I be talking about him on a podcast that is called the Politocrat Daily Podcast? Well, because I do believe sometimes in a change of pace. Just a few days ago, dear listener, you may remember if you had occasion to listen, and you can if you had not had occasion to listen. I did do a podcast episode about film and about politics and about films that had political bent, political ramifications in them as stories, as themes, as narratives, and films that had an impact politically. And every film has politics in it. Every film is inherently political, whether it's seen on the screen or whether it's not, in terms of what the politics are. The politics of the film may not even be on the screen. It may be in the background. It may be in the financing, it may be in the studio that released it, it may be in the way it was released, whether it was independent or studio financed or backed or distributed, you know, all those things. So I did an episode on that. So these things are all related. Pedro Almodovar does champion the realm of non-gender conformity. He does it really well in the films that he does. And not for some gimmick, not to say, hey, I'm hip, I'm down with this or that. It's just naturally done, and it's done from a place of real sincerity and love. And he is just really honest about relationships between people, whether they are people who are of the same gender or of different genders or of neither gender. I really do like that he takes a very honest approach to that. And as a straight person, I actually really appreciate and respect that he's one of the few filmmakers, and again, I need to perhaps be exposed to different types of filmmakers in what I'm about to say, but of the filmmakers that I've watched, regardless of whether they're straight, gay, or whichever, you know, non-binary, non-gender conforming, whichever, you know, trans filmmakers, whomever, you know, of the filmmakers I've been exposed to, I can't, and I'm, again, I don't say it's a galaxy of people of different genders and in terms of gender conformity or non-gender conformity and gender fluidity and transgender, you know, any number of persons. I think the person that seems to really portray these kinds of relationships between different types of people as really lovingly as I've ever seen it is from people like Pedro Almodovar. I can't think of any, but well, there are others, I'm sure. I just can't think of anyone as prolific as he who does it. And I'm sure there are some, and I know someone's going to say, well, look, you forgot that person or this person or that person. But Pedro Almodovar, oh my goodness me. Anyway, I have spent now, what, a good 7 or 8 minutes talking about Pedro Almodovar. And it, all because of Alberto Iglesias. Iglesias, Alberto Iglesias. That piece of music you heard at the beginning there, it's called Títulos de Crédito, which I think means opening credits. I think, you know, in Spanish. But anywho, go and watch Broken Embraces. I like the film. It's got a little bit of a rough edge to it, as do some other Pedro Almodovar films. I think Broken Embraces is one of the ones with a rough edge, but I think that if you want a real rough, very sorrow, depressing edge to a film, really deeply distressing edge, go and watch Bad Education. Bad Education, La Mala Educación, from Almodovar. Oh boy, that is one of the most downbeat films I've ever seen, and I've seen many downbeat films. Well, I'm talking about film today, but I really should be talking about something else. You know, I really should. But anywho, oh my gosh, I wander into this realm because there are plenty of broken embraces on this particular night. And I'm going to cross into the realm of what I should be crossing into, which is these elections that we had here today, tonight. On this day, November 2nd, we had elections. And I must say, there were a lot of firsts, mainly in municipal offices. A couple of state, but mainly in municipal offices. But we had a lot of firsts to celebrate, but we also had a lot of, I think, pretty darn bad defeats, a few bad defeats. And when I say we, I'm talking about the Democratic Party. And I am disgusted with them tonight. I am disgusted with them. I've absolutely had it up to the imaginary here with the Democratic Party. I'm not the Democratic Party at large, per se, but the corporates in that party, with the elites in that party, because there are some there, don't pretend they're not. I've had it with them. I've had it with the elites. I've had it with the corporates. I've had it with the people who stick their nose up at anyone who dares challenge them. I've had it with these moderates who are really Republicans. They just pretend that they are Democrats. I've had it with them. The Joe Manchins, the Kyrsten Sinemas, and the fundraising emails that tell me I've got to donate an extra few dollars. 20, 50, 100, 200. What do you say, Omar? Can you make it 300 this time? I've had it with it. I'm sick to the eye teeth of it. Of these blooming fundraising emails. But your freaking election results ain't matching up with what you are telling us. When you've got a governor, are you kidding me? A governor in Virginia? Democratic Governor Ralph Northam is leaving his post. That's the guy that dressed up in blackface, you know. And then said, oh, it wasn't him. Oh, by the way, it was me, the guy next to the guy in the Klan. But we were both in blackface, but the guy in the Klan hood. No, it wasn't either. Neither of them was me. Oh, but I did put black shoe polish on for the Michael Jackson moonwalking contest. Do you want me to show you a move? And then his wife looked at him. Remember that? A couple of years back, 2 or 3 years ago, his wife gave him that look. And when your wife gives you a look like that, you'd best behave yourself. And so, yeah, look, listen, he did some good things. He got rid of that freaking death penalty in Virginia, I'll tell you that. So, I mean, that's one of the good things I can say about Ralph Northam. And he actually is trying to make an effort. He was trying to make an effort to improve himself after the horrible, embarrassing, racist stuff that he was exposed as. And didn't resign after all of us said, this guy has to resign. See, I'm not just about attacking the Republicans when they obviously should be attacked, because they should be attacked all the friggin' time, because they are disgusting. They are autocrats. They are traitors to the country. You better believe it. The party that was called Republican that you knew in the 1970s is gone, mate. Gone, 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 goodbye. Like that home run tonight that was hit by Jorge Soler of the Atlanta team when they defeated the Houston Astros in the World Series of Baseball here in the United States. Well, look, I know most people that are listening to me right now don't give a rat's ass about baseball. But the point is that the biggest story tonight, not Atlanta winning the World Series, the biggest story tonight was these Democrats losing these freaking important seats, these important governor's races. Well, actually, one of them is in the balance at the minute. The one in New Jersey is particularly worrying to me because it's so close, and the one in Virginia is not close. That's the one that is also worrying. And the thing I'm trying to say is that you had a governor who used to be governor pardon me I apologize who used to be governor of Virginia. His name is Terry McAuliffe. He's a Democrat. He's a centrist. Moderate. He used to be governor. The rule in Virginia, I think I've told you this before, is that you cannot be governor for two consecutive terms. You can only serve two terms as governor, but they cannot be consecutive. So every 4 years in Virginia, there is an election for governor. And what happened was, Terry McAuliffe served his one term a couple of terms ago, whenever that was. And now he's come back to try to finish off the other 4 years of his gubernatorial stance. So he ran against someone called, a thing called Glenn Youngkin, or whatever the heck his name is. Or whatever his name is. Glenn Youngkin. Oh, God. Youngkin. The kin who is young. But he is a disgusting anti-woman, anti-choice, anti-female autonomy, anti-personal autonomy, autocratic Republican piece of garbage. But that's the guy that won the bloody election. He won. He won going away. It wasn't even close. It was like 5 percentage points. God, dear. Why are the Democrats continuing to lose these governor's races in off-year elections? Why? Why are the candidates so milquetoast? These moderates do not excite anybody. And you know what else I have a problem with? The Democratic Party takes black voters for granted. It takes us for granted, for granted, for granted. It's like what Dr. King said. The promissory note that comes back marked insufficient funds. That is the Democratic Party right now for us. It's been that way for us now for a number of years with the Democratic Party. Ever since this party turned corporate back in the late 1980s into the early 90s in the third way and Al Frum and Bill Clinton, when the party began to become the party of the top 10% and no longer the party of the traditional working class. And I say the traditional working class. What I really should say is the Democratic Party stopped becoming the traditional party of the working class and the working poor. And I think that happened sometime in the mid-1980s. And it was, well, we've got to compete with the Reagan onslaught, with the Reagan juggernaut. Reagan's won 2 terms, and now George H.W.'s won a term. What are we all to do as Democrats? And you know what happened? Money was what they were to do. And they funneled in more money and more money and more money and appealed less to the working class. And it was all about, well, we'll give you some civil rights. We'll be happy with that. Yeah, we'll look out for a woman's right to choose. But basically, we're the same as the Republicans, except we will fight for some regulations because the Republicans don't believe in any freaking regulations. They're like blooming libertarians. And that's where the party is now. The Democratic Party has absolute contempt for black people. That is a fact. That is not me just saying anything. They have contempt for black folk. We vote, and we vote. We vote in higher numbers than anybody in terms of our percentage of the population. We vote like it's no tomorrow. We vote. 93% of us voted. 93% of us who voted for Joe Biden, black folk. 93%. There's no other group in this country that voted in the kind of percentage that we voted for President Biden. Nobody. The closest one, Latinos at 73 or 76%, somewhere around there. Then you had Asians, I think, were around 60-something percent. And natives were a little bit higher than that, I think. Native Americans. Now, all of those groups voted, well over 50% of their group voted for President Biden. But you know who didn't? White people. White women, they actually voted more for that piece of garbage that left the White House in January. They voted more for him than they did the previous time. When it was around 51, 52, 53% in 2016, it went up to 55, 56% last year, almost a year ago. So more white women as a percentage voted for that piece of garbage that left the White House. More of them. Mm-hmm. White men, it was around the same in 2020. I think maybe a slightly bit lower, but not much. Something like 50-something percent. Oh, I forget what it was. 54, 53, 54. 56, I don't even remember. But the point is that more white women were the only group, I think, whose percentage voting for that piece of garbage that left the White House increased. And it happened again with the Virginia election today, tonight. Turns out, and the numbers are still being counted, but the exit polls, and I look, exit polls are reliable. They are not faked. But, you know, you want to look at the actual poll, but the exit poll tells a story. Sahil Kapoor, who is a reporter, did chronicle this. In the gubernatorial race in, I guess it was what, 2016 or so, or 2017, white women voted roughly, I think it was something around the order of 50% for Joe Biden and 49% for the piece of garbage. And imagine that, split down the middle, split down the freaking middle. 50% voted for Biden, 49%. This is from Sahil Kapoor. At Sahil, S-A-H-I-L, Kapoor, K-A-P-U-R, or Kapoor, I don't know, it might be Kapoor. But the point is that he put out this NBC News, of all places, exit poll, in 2020. So let me correct this. This is from 2020. In Virginia, 50% white women voted for Biden, 49% of them voted for the piece of garbage. Now, tonight, in the same state, white women, 57% of them voted for the governor, the new governor now. He's going to be governor, I think, beginning in January. Youngkin, 57%. 43% for McAuliffe. What the hell happened? I know one is a president and one is a governor, and that really shouldn't matter all the hell that much. I know some people say, well, it does, because when the party that's in the White House gets in, they usually vote for the opposite party in the gubernatorial or in the state. I mean, I think that's such a bunch of bullcrap, even if the numbers do bear that out. What the heck would that be about? Ooh, that sounds like some privileged bullcrap, doesn't it, dear listener? Oh, well, I have the luxury of, oh, well, my team didn't get in the White House. Well, I'm going to put them in locally. Like you're dangling pieces on a freaking chessboard. You know, it's like, come on. Like some freaking privileged playground. Oh, I'm going to just, well, my team didn't get, oh, I'm going to put them in here. Your move. Knight to rook. I mean, like what? Knight to rook. I mean, what? It makes no sense. And people gobble this up and believe it. You know, they've done it. They've done it this way for years in Virginia. They've always done the opposite of what they did just a year or so ago, or 2 years ago. Ugh. But even if that is true, and it is true, actually, in a lot of these states, that makes no cockamamie sense whatsoever. It makes no sense. Why the heck do people do that? And I just think there's something really weird and privileged about it all. Really weird and white privileged about it. Ooh, we've got the luxury of just putting a piece over here and a piece on the chessboard over there. I'll move the pawn one space. I mean, it makes no sense to me. It's like these people that go, well, I'm sitting it out. Ooh, I'm not voting for anybody. And usually, and there are some black people that do this, but usually, overwhelmingly, white people do this. And it's silly. And it's privileged. Because you, particularly if you're a white, straight man, have no damn care in the world who's in. Because for the most part, you're not really going to be affected policy-wise. You're not going to take a hit. But if you're white and male and gay, if you're white and female and gay, if you are a trans person of any racial background, particularly if you are black, you can forget it. And Glenn Youngkin in Virginia is a homophobic piece of garbage and a racist and a you know what. And he's also a piece of garbage endorsed piece of garbage. And that's the guy that beat milquetoast Terry McAuliffe. Tippy Terry, who just thinks he can just walk into a room and wow them all with his cavalier, smarmy, arrogant attitude. And no wonder a traitor defeats you. How can you lose to a traitor in 2021? We are almost 10 months removed from a terrorist attack here on the United States soil. January 6th, 2021 was almost exactly 10 months ago. And the idea that you would lose to a freaking traitor, that you can't even beat a Republican traitor, a traitor not to the Republican Party, a Republican who is a traitor, because nearly every last one of them is. How can you lose to someone who hates the United States? How can you lose to that person in an election inside the United States? You must be doing a whole heck of a lot wrong to manage to lose to someone like that. You really must be. Unless you want to just throw these elections and intentionally be as piss poor as you can be, so that then you can get up there and run, or someone else can run in a couple of years, or rather in 4 years in the case of the gubernatorial race, and start waving your pom-poms about how these Republicans suck, when you should have freaking well done that throughout the campaign that ended tonight with your defeat. What is the Democratic strategy, by the way, with these state races? How come you guys suck so much when it comes to putting in Democrats where you should easily be putting them? How the hell is that possible? Because, yeah, there are swaths of white women who are to blame. But even more so than that, what's the Democratic Party doing? I think there's a lot of blame to go around there. Because you keep losing with these damn moderates. And you keep forgetting conveniently that your base is not white women. It's not white women at all. It is black folk. Your base is those 93% of black people who a year ago voted for Joe Biden. That's your base. And he wouldn't have won by nearly 8 million friggin' votes. He wouldn't have won by that many, or even close to that many, had it not been for black people voting. 93%. Which political party outside of the Democratic Party ever gets 93% of anyone to vote for them? I'll wait. There is no other party in the United States of America who enjoys such a robust percentage voting in their favor from one single voting block. It don't ever happen anywhere. Not in the United States, anyway. And for the Democratic Party to completely turn its back on black people, it's a death knell for the party to do such a foolish thing and an arrogant thing and a contemptuous thing such as that. And every year they do it to us. Just a year ago, almost a year ago. Just wait till November 7th rolls around. I'll play the freaking audio. Oh, the African-American community has always had my back, and I'll have yours. Oh, give me a friggin' break. You ain't had jack. Your priority has never been voting rights. And by the way, let me just add this. Voting rights is not only a black issue, so to speak. It is a white issue. It is a Native issue. It is an Asian issue, a Latina issue. It's all of our issues. Black, brown, white, Native, Asian. It affects all of us. There are poor white people who are affected by this. There are white students and black students that are affected by this. Why aren't you pressing this harder, President Biden? You do not have our back, and the Democratic Party doesn't either. You would have got rid of this filibuster by now. You would have got rid of this. The Voting Rights Act would have been done. It would have been a done deal. John Lewis would have been smiling. Tonight was a disgrace by the Democrats, and it's a consistent disgrace. They've done this again and again and again. A year ago, they lost all these House seats. All of these House seats. The Democrats went into the November 2020 general election with a 31 or 2 seat majority in the House of Representatives, around 31 seats, thereabouts. And they came out of that election last year, November 2020, with only a 7 or 8 seat majority. They lost over 20 seats. It was a bloodletting. That was last year during the presidential election. What are the Democratic Party doing? What is it doing? All I get are fundraising emails. I just don't understand it. This party wants your money, but it doesn't care about your issues. Yes, there are Democrats who are fighting. Of course there are. There are Democrats who do care. There are Democrats who are out there. I talked about one of them the other day, Maxine Waters, the representative out of California. She cares. Premier Jayapal cares. Cori Bush cares. Rashida Tlaib cares. AOC cares. I can go to the whole list. There are Democrats who are fighting for us. There are Democrats who are fighting for the working stiff. There are Democrats who are fighting for people who do not have their own personal autonomy. But those are the progressive Democrats I've just talked about. Those names I just mentioned, they're all progressive or leaning progressive. But these moderates are the ones who control the party, the centrist wing, the moderate wing, the blue dog wing, the corporate wing. They control the party. It's not the moderates. It's not the progressives who do, it's the moderates. And the moderates preach this, well, we've got to go slow, we've got to be incremental. Hillary Clinton ran that kind of campaign. You saw where that got her. I know the Electoral College, I get it. But you saw where that got her, right? It got her a lot of black folks staying home for many reasons, many reasons. There was no pizzazz there. And she was a candidate. It seemed only the moderates and only some women could gravitate to. She wasn't popular with lots of men, swaths of men, of any group. Why are the Democratic Party continuing to run candidates that don't have any pizzazz? Now, Hillary Clinton is an excellent, one of the most talented candidates ever. And a policymaker, someone who would govern well, but she was not a good campaigner. She would admit that to you. Not a good campaigner. And for better or worse, what counts in this society here in the United States is optics. Optics. The optics. And they weren't good for Hillary Clinton. She didn't have that pizzazz, that wow. She didn't. She didn't have that magnetism. That just was not her bag, baby, to quote Austin Powers. Just wasn't her thing. She was much more about governing and discussing policy and getting in the weeds and getting right into the business of doing the work. She wasn't all about the glad handing. She was clearly, quite frankly, uncomfortable with it. Never liked it. And you could tell. It didn't translate well. Then she picked a vice presidential candidate. Oh my God. Tim Kaine. Jeez. From Virginia, by the way. You could not get a more milquetoast person. And I think the guy's a decent person. He's just very, very bland. And he tries too hard to be funny. How can you run the country with such milquetoast candidates? How can you hope to win general elections like that? I think what got Joe Biden by was Kamala Harris. And the urgency of the moment really helped too, to get rid of the piece of garbage that was there before Joe Biden. What are the Democrats doing? And why the hell do they keep losing these damn elections? You can no longer break, you can no longer, in fact, you never ever should, even try to blame progressives for your losses. There's always been a civil war to an extent, quote unquote civil war in the Democratic Party. And I'm telling you, I'm fed up of these moderates who try to make it seem like the progressives are the enemy. And you scapegoat us for every time your ass has run a piss poor vanilla campaign. I'm going to tell you why the progressives are not to blame for what happened tonight, right after this. Progressives are the party that will win. That is the voting bloc of Democrats that will win, that fuel these wins. Black people fuel these election wins for Democrats. Show me a Democrat who wins, and I will show you a large percentage of black people who voted that Democrat in. Take heed. Take heed. If you don't want to look at us, you're going to have to pay the consequences for refusing to look at us. We are your base. Stop running after white voters who don't give a garbage damn about you. They don't care. They're not voting for you. Why are you chasing after a group of people who are splitting their vote or voting more with Republicans than they are with you? Why are you chasing them? Like a freaking drug. When you've got your trusty 93% of us as black people voting for you and you just turn your back on us? Utter madness. Utter madness. Rashida Tlaib, Premier Jayapal, AOC, Ilhan Omar, Mondaire Jones, Marie Newman, Jamal Bowman, Indira or India Walton. Ed Markey, Cori Bush, these are just a few of the progressives who have won office since 2018 in this country, the United States of America. That's just a small group of them. There are many others that I haven't even read out. Some of the persons I read out were members of Congress in the House. Some of them were senators, in the case of Ed Markey, who ran against a moderate and held on easily to defeat a Kennedy, no less. I don't know why a moderate Democrat would be running against a progressive who already has the Senate seat, but that's a whole nother thing. And some of the people I mentioned are mayors, and India Walton is soon going to be the first socialist mayor of any U.S. city since 1960. I actually, you know, I don't know. It's actually very close right now with India Walton. So I shouldn't be predicting a win with India Walton because it's still very close right now. At least as I last looked at the score. So I shouldn't say that yet. So scratch India Walton's name off of there for now. But the other people all won office in the last 3 years, within the last 3 years, and won it against Republicans or against moderates in the Democratic Party. More progressives made a big difference, and more people were voting for progressives. And I want you to keep that in mind. Marie Newman won in Illinois in a district there in the state Senate. I don't think it was the U.S. Senate. I think it was the state Senate. I'll have to go check that. She's a progressive. All of these people I mentioned, the progressives. Markey's a progressive. AOC's a progressive. Ilhan Omar's a progressive. Rashida Tlaib's a progressive. Pramila Jayapal a progressive. All of these people. Mondaire Jones, Jamal Bowman, they're all progressives. They all won. Jamal Bowman was a school principal. He won, and he won easily, I might add. Knocked Elliot Engel out the box, easy. The longtime congressman, moderate, longtime Democrat, has been there for 30 some odd years, taking up space. He was soundly beaten by Jamal Bowman, soundly whooped. He opened up a can of whoop-ass central on Elliot Engel, sent his ass packing. I mean, these were emphatic wins in some of these particular races. I just don't understand it. Why is it that the moderates in the party have such a problem with progressives? I get it, there's been a divide in the party, but this goes back forever. Let's go back a year, for example. Let's go back to November of last year. Let me tell you about this. This is a headline from the New York Times. Amid tears and anger, House Democrats promise deep dive on election losses. This was last freaking year. November the 5th, 2020. The writers were Luke Broadwater and Nicholas Fandos. A freaking year ago. They lost loads of seats last year, I told you. They had a 31, a 32 seat majority, whatever the heck it was, 29, 30, 31, in the House of Representatives, the Democrats did. And they came out of the election a year ago. On the same night that President Biden was leading, Joe Biden at the time, and we found out for sure just a few days after that, right, after November 3rd of last year, that on November 7th of last year, he was projected the winner, right? President-elect. That was a Saturday of last year, November 7th, 2020. So even when a Democrat won the White House, these Democrats just hemorrhaged seats. In the state elections, in the federal elections, What the hell's going on? What is this Democratic Party doing? And why is it continuing to take black voters for granted? Why are you firing spitballs at progressives? And all they're doing is winning. The vast majority of these elections that the progressives contest in, they're winning them. Whether it's a district attorney here in San Francisco, whether it is a socialist who won here in San Francisco and the Board of Supervisors, Dean Preston is his name. Chesa Boudin is the San Francisco district attorney, embattled. But he's a progressive. And Dean Preston, is a socialist. I know it's San Francisco, but you've got to understand something, dear listener. For those of you who don't live in San Francisco or don't live in California at all, San Francisco is not this progressive bastion anymore, you know. There are some pockets of progressive bastion in San Francisco, California, but this ain't your 1970s California. This ain't your father's or mother's or grandfather's or grandmother's San Francisco anymore. It's a very gentrified, very whitewashed San Francisco, California. Black folk here are not, we're non-existent in this town. I might be one of the only ones around. I mean, we do exist and we do live here. But not a whole heck of a lot of us. It's less than 5%. Seriously, I'm not making that up. So you have to understand, this is not your Haight-Ashbury of 1960s San Francisco anymore. It just isn't. All the gentrification that's happened here has happened in London, in Portugal, all over the world. You know, in New York and in Harlem in particular, up in New York. Gentrification is a global thing and it's destroying places. San Francisco's one of them. It's not the same. The tourists don't come here as much as they used to. But this isn't about San Francisco. This is about the fact I'm using this city, this great city, to make a point, right? And it used to be even a better city than that. It's still a good city, San Francisco. Still a lovely city, don't get me wrong. And I like it here. I love it here, actually. But here's the thing, right? I use San Francisco as an example that progressives are winning in a city that is not necessarily the same kind of San Francisco. Yes, it still overwhelmingly votes Democratic, but there's a lot of conservatives in San Francisco and a lot of conservative Democrats here too. Depends on the neighborhood. But my question, my thing is, you still have progressives winning here. And the thing is, and I go back to what, and I believe it's, was it Truman that said this in the 40s, 46, 47, Truman, if you give voters a choice, give them a choice between a real Republican and a fake Republican, and they'll vote for the real Republican every time. And that is so blooming true today, as it was back in 46 or 47 when President Truman actually uttered those words. Harry Truman actually said those words. I think it was in 46 or 47, one of those 2 years. He said that, maybe a bit later than that. But he did say that. And you've got too many moderate Democrats trying to be Republicans. They don't know where they sit. Oh, I'm a centrist. I'm in the middle. I don't know where I should be. I'm kind of here with my views and there with my views. And I get it. We all have different views, you and I, dear listener. And yes, sometimes we're conservative on our views and some things. And we're more liberal on our views on others. I get that. I do understand that. Of course, you, me, all of us, we all have this, dear listener. That's not a question. But my thing is, when you're running for freaking office, you better know where you stand on things. And I keep telling you about the example of Max Rose, the moderate out of blooming Staten Island, New York, for goodness sake. If that's not a bastion of conservatism, I don't know what is in New York or in the world. But Max Rose, like, I almost said Max Roach, the jazz artist. But Max Rose, I'll never forget it. I keep talking about this. He was having a debate on New York One up against Nicole Meliotakis, right? And she's the Republican. And I talked about she wore this bright, bright red. Pizzazz, pow. Again, I'm not trying to, She brought this bright red jacket, scarlet. And what was Max Rose wearing? Some bland ass suit. Kind of, he had his shirt. It was a white shirt with, the, you know, the usual boring crap that a lot of men wear. And the color scheme was, and she popped on the screen. You could just see that. And that was not an accident that she wore that. And it's not just because she was a Republican. She wore a particular kind of red. And that burned through the TV screen. So that anybody who was watching that debate, because of course we had the pandemic going on as it continues to, so they weren't in the same place. So New York won, did the debate. And her points were clear and to the point. I didn't agree with her politics at all. But Max Roach, I knew I'd say it again. Max Rose was waffling all over the place. This is the Democrat. Well, I'm not so sure that I'm against getting rid of that, and defund the police is a little bit strong, but this is 5 or 6 months after George Floyd was lynched for all the world to see. I'm not so sure if we should defund the police and da da. And who won that election? Nicole Maniatakis. And who was it that was speaking to President Biden when he gave his joint address near the beginning of the year back in February? Nicole Maniatakis. I saw her. She was up right up in front of the camera. She was one of the first people shaking his hand and talking to him and, look, Mr. President, and putting her hand on him. And she was wearing, again, something really, I'm telling you, optics make a difference. Optics do make a difference. And it did in that debate. And I'm telling you, these Democratic moderates are just so lightweight. They are lighter than paper. And they get their asses handed to them in these elections. And it's not so much that the Democratic Party doesn't know how to win. It seems to me sometimes they don't want to win some of these bloody elections. I know that sounds really stupid to say. But as I've said before, I've said this many times. The Democrats are more interested, these particular Democrats, the elites, are more interested in power and control than they are in winning actual elections. That's what I truly have come to believe over the years. Because they would rather keep power than have some progressive blow up their spot and take the seat that they want a moderate to win. Because they know that damn well, and they know damn well that the moderate ain't going to do anything to make any major change. That's what this is, and they know the progressive will. And will also unseat their own power in the process. Unseat the moderates' power I'm talking about. They don't want moderates anywhere near this show. They don't want progressives anywhere near this show at all. They don't want us. They don't want this. Because they know their days are over. If progressives get in power, they think they're going to go back to this stodgy lot, this stodgy, moderate, brittle-ass, centrist corporate group? DCCC? They had a big meeting. This story that I just quoted you the headline from by Luke Broadwater and Nicholas Fandos of November 5th, 2020, and I've read this out on the air before here on the podcast. It talks about the big meeting that the DCCC and Speaker Pelosi and a number of other people had, all these Democrats in the House. And this is after the Democrats lost all these friggin' seats. They lost almost 30 seats. That's last year. I'm not even talking about what happened tonight. I'm talking about a year ago. They've still not solved this freaking problem. The moderates in the Democratic Party, the elites who run it, the pencil neck geeks who sit there with their bean counters, crunching numbers and analytics like Nate Silver in them. I'm not saying Nate Silver's doing this at the Democratic Party, but you know what I mean. I think you know what I mean, dear listener. And these folks have got no clue about us. They don't care about the average black voter. They've got absolute contempt for us. We'll do it this way and we'll do it that way. Some white male whippersnapper who's 22 hasn't shaved a day in his life yet. And these are the kinds of people that are running the freaking party with all this freaking analytics. And then these donors, bloodless donors. I mean, my goodness. And all they're asking, and then there's more money they're asking for. And how many times are you back in voting rights again? How many times are you going to get rid of this filibuster and this electoral college again? That's just pathetic. And all you guys keep doing in the moderates, you all keep losing. We keep voting for you and you keep losing. So you must not really care too much about winning elections if your asses keep losing year after year in these off-year elections. How can you have President Biden, a President Biden, last year, and on the same freaking night, you lose nearly 30 bloody seats? How's that even possible? And meanwhile, all the progressives I just mentioned earlier, they're all winning their seats. It's all the most of these seats that the House Democrats lost a year ago were by moderates, were moderates losing. And it happened again tonight. McAuliffe losing in the Democratic governor's race in Virginia. That's a massive race to lose. And that will definitely affect 2022 and perhaps 2024. And the fact that the Democrats lost nearly 30 seats last year's elections is definitely a harbinger of things to come. I think the Democratic Party now is in big effing trouble, man. Big trouble. And to the point in which I think they could be absolutely gutted in the House next year. Could be. I'm telling you. But you know what? The people who are in power in the Democratic Party right now, they don't really give a rat's ass. Because they're rich and they don't have to worry about where their head is going to land on the pillow at night. But let me tell you this. There are millions of people in this country who do have to worry about where their heads are going to land. Whether it's on a pillow or whether it's on freaking concrete. Because if you have House Republicans taking over this thing, it's over. It's done. Like a piece of meat. Grilled, finished, done. Because it's over and out. These people will not relinquish power. And the problem with the Democratic Party right now is that the party is so soft when it is in power. It's too goddamn polite. And I've said that there's no such thing as being too nice, but when it comes to power, oh yes, there is. You know, the Democratic Party, they tend to stroke power and feel it. The Republican Party wields power and freaking uses it. That's one of the major differences between these two parties. But they're part of the same system, which I've said a billion times. You know this, dear listener. But you have got to stop chasing after these white voters. These white female voters, these white male, stop chasing after them. Most of them don't vote for you. What are you chasing after them for? Especially these suburban voters. They don't give a rat's about you. You did the same thing 4 years ago, 5 years ago with Hillary Clinton. Her strategy, partly, it wasn't hers. The strategy was from people like Robbie Mook, who was a disaster. Oh, yeah, go chase after the white suburban women. Oh, yeah, Well, great job that was. Same thing last year. That didn't work, did it? They still voted for the piece of garbage. Why is the Democratic Party chasing after these white female voters? I just don't know. And there's black voters you should be chasing after. We're the ones voting for you. Forget these white women that keep voting for Republicans. Forget these white men that keep voting for Republicans. And by the way, the white electorate is always split between the two parties. It's always been black folk in this country who have been the difference in deciding where this goes. Like what Malcolm X said in the early 60s, anywhere you go, that's who gets it. Any way you vote, that is who wins. What Malcolm X said in the 60s. And he's right. He was right then. And he's no longer around. But he's still right now. He's still correct. If it wasn't for black folk, and by extension, some brown folk voting, 66, 67, 70% of them, I think it was, Latinos, about 73%, I think it was, 75, and natives and Asians, if it wasn't for those groups I just mentioned voting for President Biden, for Joe Biden last year, we would have a second term of the piece of garbage. In fact, we would have another two terms of him because he wouldn't leave. If it wasn't for black folk out here, the Democratic Party would be dust. It would be mud. It would be dirt. And then who do they treat with the most contempt? Black people. Us. The black voters who put Joe Biden where he's sitting right now. These Democrats. And listen, I don't care how black Jamie Harrison is. He's another moderate who got his ass waxed last year by a freaking Republican traitor named Lindsey Graham. I don't care how black Jamie Harrison is. He better start hollering at black voters. He better start doing that. We are the goddamn base of the Democratic Party. And don't you forget it, DNC. Don't you forget it, Democratic Party. And don't you forget it, Jamie Harrison. Look in the mirror, man. That's the freaking base of the Democratic Party. Right? 93% of us voted for Joe Biden last year. You have to start recognizing that. You have to start understanding that Doug Jones, remember Doug Jones? The guy who won the Senate for the Democrats in Alabama back in 2017, I believe it was, the first Democrat to win in 30 years or so in Alabama as the senator. If it wasn't for black people, he turned his campaign the last week or two a full court press for the black vote. And it worked. And if it wasn't for him doing that, he would not have been in the Senate for the years he was. He wouldn't have been there. It's always down to us. Right? It's not about us saving anybody. It's not about black women saving Jack. It's about the people who aren't voting for Democrats, mainly white people who aren't voting for Democrats. Yes, sure, some are. But your vote's always been split between them, so right down the freaking middle. Almost all the time throughout American history. You guys need to be looking at yourselves in the mirror and asking yourselves, why is it that we are so bitterly divided? Even more so than the Democratic Party is, why is it the white voters are so bitterly divided between these two parties? Black voters are very freaking clear. Asian voters are pretty damn clear. Latino voters are pretty damn clear. Native voters are pretty damn clear. But white voters are not. They're split right down the freaking middle between these two parties. But all the other groups I mentioned, the ones that some of you, not you, dear listener, but people in the world love to call minorities. We aren't no freaking minorities, mate. Call us by our freaking name, to quote a film, right? We are black, we are brown, we are Latino. We are Native American. We are Asian. Call us by our freaking names. Don't lump us as freaking minorities. Because together, look what we did. Black folk, 93% of us voted for Joe Biden. And the Democratic Party has got to stop playing bullcrap games and start looking in the mirror and stop having all this damn contempt for black voters. And tell Joe Biden, the president of this country, that he has got to start fighting harder for voting rights and against this stupid filibuster and against the electoral college. What is he doing? What are the Democrats doing? This is the recipe for absolutely getting your head handed to you, getting your ass handed to you in 2022. Is that what you want? So then you can turn around and go, well, these Republicans are horrible and they stink. Well, when you were in power, why didn't you drive these asses out? But you're so cavalier with power. You're cavalier with it, and the traitors wield it and use it and decimate people with it. Part of the same system as good cop, bad cop. You got to start being the good cop here, and you got to start advocating for the people. Otherwise, you're going to get more losses like this. Start running progressive candidates more in these big seats that you love. And stop trampling progressives. Oh, defund the police. Please. Oh, that's the reason that nearly 30 moderates got their asses handed to them a year ago, Jim Clyburn? Really? Oh, well, the progressives and defund the police was just wrong, and the progressives and defund the police. Now, I say that that is the wrong approach. Oh, shut it. You know, I respect James Clyburn, but give me a freaking break. And no one used that this time around. They were using, critical race theory. I keep telling you, dear listener, these Republicans trot out a new fear-mongering thing every election, and it always freaking works because people keep amplifying and republishing it, and the media lobs onto it because they love to do this. And they love to parrot all the Republican stuff for us because they really love it. And because maybe their owners are Republican too. So they love to do this. And everybody ends up talking about the toxic lies that the Republicans are talking about and not the actual truthful things that Democrats are fighting for. And then the moderates keep reacting. The moderate Democrats keep reacting to the garbage of the Republicans. And they're not proactive enough. Then they get their asses handed to them at election time. So, Congressman Clyburn, what are you talking about? You're the majority whip, right? In the House. I think Steny Hoyer is the majority leader in the House. And, of course, Speaker Pelosi is Speaker Pelosi. But explain to me, riddle me this, Jim Clyburn. What of critical race theory? Progressives didn't make that up. How come your ass is still lost? How come you moderate Democrats still lost seats? Overwhelmingly, these losses, almost all of them were moderates again. Please don't scapegoat us. Don't do that to us. Don't do that. Don't do that. That's a losing strategy. You need to really look at yourself and ask yourself, what kind of party are you? Who are you truly representing? Is it the corporates? Is it the moderates? Is it the elites? The top 10%? Or is it all the people? We the people? Is it black folk in general specifically? Because we are your goddamn base, mate. 93, I'm going to keep saying that freaking number until the end of time. 93% of us voted for Joe Biden last year. He promised to have our back. And 10 months in, we're still waiting for our backs to be had. Not targeted, but had by him. It's a losing strategy here, Jamie, and the Democratic Party in general. It's a losing strategy. And you've seen it now for 2 election cycles. Now what you gonna do? Thank you very much for listening to this edition of The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore. By the way, can you tell me who the moderate voting base is? I mean, I have a pretty good idea what the and who the progressive voting base is. Who is the moderate voting base? Who are they? I bet you it's not very many people, especially when it comes to the progressives in comparison. Who is the moderate voting base that the Democratic Party is running all hither and dale over to try to get? That's the question. I'd like an answer.